got room for one more.
Hello and welcome to episode 97 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hello, everybody. Hello.
So this week we are talking about two different movies. We have first The Revenant, and then we're going to review The Hateful Eight. So first up, The Revenant. Angie, you have that one.
All right, here's the synopsis. In the 1820s, a frontiersman named Hugh Glass sets out on a path of vengeance against those who left him for dead after a bear mauling. It's the new movie by Alejandro González Iñárritu. Hugh Glass is played by Leonardo DiCaprio, and the people who left him for dead are Tom Hardy and Will Poulter from We're the Millers.
Yeah.
That's a real thing.
For some reason, hearing his first name and his last name is making me think of, like, George Glass.
Hugh Glass? Yeah.
Well, I don't know why.
Hugh Glass makes me think of Hugh Jass, which was a joke on The Simpsons.
Me too.
So,
me
like,
too.
I can't believe. I don't care. I know this was based on a real guy. I don't care if that is his name. I don't know if it is. I know it's based, whatever. Nonsense. Change that name. They're like, what about you, Hugh Glass? And I was like, what?
You can think of this basically as a live-action reboot of The Good Dinosaur. No, I'm just kidding. But it is basically.
Well, what's funny is you made that comparison when we reviewed The Good Dinosaur, which at that point I had seen The Revenant, but Angie hadn't yet. And I was like, that's a very good comparison. And then she saw The Revenant and she goes, it really is like The Good Dinosaur. I was like, yeah. Yeah, it is. Except bear maulings and way more graphic.
Oh, yeah. My God. The bear mauling.
And not as good, and actually not as upsetting, because this is a big, 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 big problem I had with this movie. The whole movie is basically you watching Leonardo DiCaprio suffer at the hands of nature, which is fine, except it gives you no reason to root for this guy's survival. None. In Good Dinosaur, at least you like Arlo and think he's cute. Well, I know Chrissy found him annoying, but you're supposed to find him cute. Like, Pixar at least was like, well, we gotta give people a reason why they want to watch 2 hours of dinosaur being beat up by Mother Nature. In this one, they're just like, oh, it's Leonardo DiCaprio, it's fine. We had him eat a real bear or a real bison liver, so it's like the same thing as acting. And it pissed me off so much that, like, this movie assumes that I have that much invested in not Leonardo DiCaprio the person, but just, like, you know, a fictional character played by Leonardo DiCaprio. Like, I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't. You need to give me a reason why I care what is happening to this guy. And I just didn't. I will say the cinematography is great, which, you know, they've been talking that up a lot, and it looks fantastic. It is a gorgeous movie. There are, like, just shots. It's very Terrence Malick-y in that there are just shots of nature and, like, you know, thoughtful monologues about the nature of life and good and evil and whatnot, and you're just like, okay. But it does look gorgeous. There are so many shots where, like, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio just kind of, like, looks out, and he's just like, wow, and you're just like, wow, that looks amazing.
So it's shot in a way that makes you feel, like, alone and cold, too. It makes you feel like you're right in there with the characters.
Yes.
But I had a very similar reaction to this movie as you did. I think this movie is, like, above and beyond absolutely incredible in so many different ways. But I could not recommend this to anybody because I don't know if there's any purpose in seeing this movie.
Unless you're there
to, like, wow at its technical prowess. And I thought a lot of the performances were really great. I mean,
Leonardo DiCaprio's, though.
Well, I thought he was really giving it his all. I bought him in the role. But I think Tom Hardy totally out-acted him. I thought Tom Hardy stole the entire movie, and I wanted to see more of his character.
The bear out-acted him. I'm so sorry. Really,
you're being a little harsh.
I want to stick with Leonardo DiCaprio a little bit, because I feel like I'm the one that liked the movie the best out of us, and I still gave it a mixed review. But
I really didn't like this movie, you guys.
No, I know. Oh, no. Angie has been talking to me about this for like a month now. But like the thing is that I thought that I liked that Leonardo DiCaprio gave up his good guy looks, you know, like he put on a big hideous beard. Hold on, just bear with me. He put on a big hideous beard. Angie's making faces if you're wondering why. I put on a big hideous beard. He put on like a big gut. He like, you know, and then he really got in there and whatever. But I agree with you, Angie, that that is not a performance. That is like, that is costuming. And I do think it was helpful to, because I think a big thing at the Oscars, and a lot of people are saying this was going to be his Oscar movie, is that you need to transform in front of the Academy. So we know him as Jordan Belfort. We know him as Titanic Leo. We know him as a handsome, swaggering douchebag. That is what we know him.
I cannot disagree more because I think that a lot of his recent roles have been him being like, I'm going to be serious. I'm going to have no sense of humor and no charisma. And that's like kind of what he's been making.
Well, that wasn't Wolf of Wall Street or Django.
No, not Wolf of Wall Street, but before that, like The Departed, like most of his stuff that he did with like Martin Scorsese, like he's like very like, I'm Mr. Serious Man. Like, I'm super serious. I'm super serious. I have no personality, no charisma, and I'm very intense and I yell a lot and I furrow my brow.
This feels like a Daniel Day-Lewis movie to me, where it feels like it's like he's trying to live in the role and all that. And I get that. But I'm with you guys in that I feel like the actual character development is so sparse that we have to work a lot to give a shit. And that's actually kind of where the movie lost me, is that I thought it was doing interesting things, but then it got really indulgent on points that I thought were ultimately diminishing returns. Which one thing was just how aggressively horrible everything is to him, because there's one point that feels like a Star Wars reference, and I'm not going to give it away because spoilers, but you'll know when you see this movie, you're like, get it, where I was just like, oh, I've bottomed out. I can feel no worse for this character, and I looked at my watch, and I was like, there are 40 minutes left of this movie. And so I've hit a point where I'm just numb, and I can't feel anything else for him. And we're still going. So that, I think, was a mistake. But then, actually, and I know the cinematography is getting a lot of praise, and there's a lot about it that I like, including there's a lot of shots of animals in the wild that reflect back on, like, humanity and nature and all that. And I thought that was all very interesting. But Emmanuel Lubezki, who is the cinematographer that a lot of people are like, oh, he's got a lock for, you know, cinematography this year, to which I say, Mad Max Fury Road, motherfuckers. But anyway, I actually really hated the way the cinematography behaves because I felt like it draws a lot of attention to itself. Like, there's a lot of whip pans, which, if you're not familiar, it basically means they're moving the camera back and forth very quickly. But what's impressive about it is it doesn't lose focus. So if two people are fighting, he has the camera going from one of them to the other, but in such a way that it never is out of focus, which I thought was really cool, but it also made me go, oh, wow, this is a really impressive whip pan, which takes me out of the movie and makes me aware of the camera. But the one that really drove me nuts, and they do it twice, is that they put the camera so close to Leonardo DiCaprio's face that when he breathes in the cold air, it foams the lens. And at one point, or it not foams,
fogs
the lens. Thank you. And then in one point, they actually crossfade it with like fog on a mountaintop. And I was like, fuck you. Because again, it's making me aware of the camera, and then it's pointing to the artifice, it's pulling me out of the story, and that made me really angry, especially because, and I feel like I can say this without spoilers, the last shot of the film is literally Leonardo DiCaprio looking into the camera. And I wrote in my review, it just felt like me and him being like, Oscar, please? And I was like, fuck you, movie! So like, I went from being really invested and interested to getting annoyed to walking out mad.
I feel like this is maybe a better cinematography showcase than a movie. Like, they do a lot of, like, artsy and technically impressive shots, which is great. But, okay, you know, I was ranting about Leo. I'll give him credit for this. He does work hard, and he does the best he can do with what he's given, I suppose, because the script gives him no inner life. It gives you, like, no sense of who this person is.
He doesn't even have lines for a lot of it.
It gives you no sense of who this person is. It gives you no sense of, like, his personality. It gives you no sense of, like, what is driving him other than, like, a very vague, like, I guess he's out for vengeance or something.
Well, you know, I almost wish this wasn't a revenge movie and it was more about, like, getting him home after the bear attacks.
So that it's even more like The Good Dinosaur?
I thought the dynamic between Tom Hardy, his son, and Will Poulter's character was much more interesting than anything we got after they were out of the picture.
Yeah. And one thing, but you mentioned about Tom Hardy, I was actually very impressed because I do think this is weirdly Tom Hardy's best performance of the year, because he's great in Mad Max, but like Mad Max is a lot about him being internal, where in this, he has lines, he talks about his motivations, and I actually like that. I felt like the villain in this, who Tom Hardy is single-handedly the bad guy, but I thought that his justifications for why he behaves the way he did made sense, so that I had an empathy for him, even though, like, what he did was wrong. I was like, I also understand making these choices.
But the movie doesn't have the confidence that you'll be able to understand, like, you know, that he's the bad guy. So toward the end of the movie, without giving too much away, they start to make some choices that try to make it more obvious who's the hero and who's the villain.
Yeah.
Which was another thing that, like, I mean, at first I was like, oh, it's kind of interesting that they decided to make it a little murkier. It was like, oh, no, you couldn't stand by that. You didn't have the conviction, the balls to stand by that. So you were just like, no, let's be really simple and dumb about it. Okay, thank you, movie. Do we have anything else to say about this movie? I'm not trying to rush it, but we do have another
movie to get to. I feel like we're coming to an end on it, well, just because it's...
I guess maybe just, like, a warning if you're listening to this and you haven't seen it. That bear attack, and this is coming from a horror lover, that bear attack is extensive. It's very, very long, and it's definitely a little tough to watch. I'm surprised they took it as far as they did.
Yeah, but it's not a rape. It's brutal. Next level brutal.
It is not a rape.
You may have seen on the internet, it is not a rape. The person who wrote that's a moron. That's all there is to be said about that.
All right. So what about, like, overall? I already kind of said my piece about this, but would you guys recommend it to someone?
I feel like there's an audience for this, but I recommend it with reservations.
It's almost like a torture porn audience.
I mean, yeah, I think this movie mistakes grim for deep or poignant or provocative. And I think that if this movie had been, you know, half an hour shorter and not because it's too long, but just because it feels too indulgent. It feels too much like after Birdman, Inarritu thought like, oh, I know what the audience wants. And it's just like, you need an editor. You need someone to like make this a little smoother, make this tighter. Cause it just felt like a really long story where at first you're like, oh yes. And then you're like, oh God, is this over yet? And it lost me because it just gets so far up its own ass. So I'm frankly rooting against it at the Oscars because I think there are better movies out there that felt like they had a purpose and they had characters, where this one, I feel like it undercuts its most interesting character, which turned out to be the villain.
I feel like if you find the idea of Leonardo DiCaprio suffering for his art in the wild to be inherently interesting, and you're willing to do a lot of the work for this movie in giving it like a little bit of depth and resonance and personality, like if you're willing to like, you know, come up with explanations in your head why any of this shit matters, then sure, go see it. But like, I don't know. Personally, I didn't like it at all. I think it's pointless. I think the movie is just kind of so proud of itself that it doesn't actually do a good job selling itself.
All right, yeah. Let's move on to our second movie, which is, I guess I would say equally violent, but in a different way. So,
it is also a Western set in snowy areas. There you go. It's another good dinosaur remake, you guys.
So this is The Hateful Eight. The Hateful Eight, in post-Civil War Wyoming, bounty hunters try to find shelter during a blizzard but get involved in a plot of betrayal and deception. Will they survive?
Bum, bum, bum.
So this is Tarantino's latest movie, and it's the one that everybody heard about because the script got out, and then he was like, I'm never making it, and I'm suing Gawker, and la la la, drama bomb. And then he did a reading, and he's like, okay, I guess I'll make it. I should do the news, guys. This was one of my most anticipated movies of the year. I'm not a huge Tarantino fan. I kind of go back and forth, but I really like Inglourious Basterds and I love Westerns. So I was very excited to watch him do another one after Django. And I have mixed feelings on this movie because there's a very clear, division in the film, like literally an intermission, which I've heard is not what they're going to do in wide release. It might just be for the 70mm, but, if you see it in the wide release, after Samuel Jackson gives a big speech, there is a intermission in the when I saw it. So what was interesting to me is the first half of the film is this very, like, it feels like the first scene in Inglourious Basterds, where Tarantino has people saying things that are filled with subterfuge, and it's really great dialogue, and there's a lot of tension, and there's a lot of, like, you know, potentially lies, and people are saying things, and no one knows if they are who they said the other people are who they say they are. And I was loving all of that and thought it was really fun and exciting. And it was like Agatha Christie in the West. It was really cool, and I was enjoying the mystery that they were building. And then the second half comes back, and all of a sudden there's a voiceover that feels like it's out of Wes Anderson, where it's like, let's tell you something that you miss. And it's like real jaunty and twee. And then they, like, reveal a major plot point in this voiceover that, like I said, comes, like, an hour and a half into the movie out of nowhere. And then after that, everything totally changes tone and becomes, like, Pulp Fiction, where it all of a sudden becomes, like, wildly violent and, like, almost cartoonish, frankly. And I don't know if I like the movie, because I really liked the first half, but I was confounded by the second.
I didn't like the movie at all, and I am a big fan of Tarantino for the most part. I mean, Inglourious Basterds is still one of my favorite movies ever. I could watch that over and over, and I hear the comparison you're making, and I was trying so hard to hold on to what I knew he did in that while I was watching the beginning of the movie. Something about the conversations weren't, they weren't, like, captivating me quite like Inglourious Bastards did the first time. But I was so desperately trying to look for those things in the earlier scenes.
Do you think it's a genre issue?
A genre issue? No, I think it's just a matter of narrative and what the dialogue was. And, like, so, I don't think the dialogue was terrible by any means. It's just it didn't have that same effect, which became problematic, and it started to make the movie feel a little slow to me. So then what ended up happening is I knew, like, the big bloody sequence was going to come. So I was, like, waiting for that. And I knew that was going to be the tipping point that either made me think that was all worth it or it was going to go the other way. And what wound up happening is it definitely went the other way, and even as someone who loves my gore and violence, there's something about the big kill scene in this movie that rubbed me the wrong way. And it, like, to the point that it, like, kind of upset me and I couldn't have fun with the things that came after it.
I'm really not entirely sure what to make of it. But one of the things that I did find was interesting is, like, how little satisfaction there is in, like, the horrible things that happen in this movie. Like, there's a speech that one character gives where at first it sounds, I don't want to give away spoilers, so I'll try to keep it vague, but I will say it's a speech where someone describes an act of revenge that he has committed. And at first you're just like, yeah, yeah, like that, you know, that other guy
fuck
was
that
a
guy.
Douche. Like, huh?
I said, like, you're like, fuck that guy.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, the other guy was a douche. You're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Awesome. And then the story keeps going and going and going, and you start to feel sick. And I felt like that a lot of this movie was that. And it's such a weird and interesting thing coming from a director who's kind of made his money on, like, you know, look, it's a revenge flick and it's violent and it's awesome and it's fun and it feels cathartic. And it felt so interesting to me that he has decided to make a movie where there is a lot of violence. There's a lot of horrible things that, like, you know, either happen on screen or that people reference having happened on screen. And there's not that much catharsis. Like, you don't really feel better for seeing it happen. Like, you start to feel sick. Like, you start to feel, like, unhappy. You start to root for people to not die. Like, and I thought that that was a really, I thought that was an interesting choice that he made, but I'm not 100% sure what to make of it. I will say, like, the first act, I'm a little bit between you guys. Like, I liked it, but I'm with Perry. Like, it felt tense, but then it also just kept going and going and going and maybe went on too long to the point where the tension was starting to deflate in the middle. Like, it starts to pick up again before the break, because a few things happen, but it was starting to kind of, like, go astray. I think maybe the movie as a whole is too long, because the second half also kind of dragged on more than.
Well, let's talk about the performances, because that's what's getting this film a lot of attention, more even than the writing.
Yeah. Walton Goggins. What? It's funny, Walton Goggins.
Oh, he's fantastic.
You know, as, like, not into the movie as a whole I am, it's, like, the exact opposite. Like, I might be, I thought he was so good in this. Like, I actually might be rooting for him.
He normally plays, like, I mean, everybody in this is kind of a bad guy, but, like, he normally plays scary dudes, and in this he's, like, a dopey racist that in my review I admitted I found kind of affable, even though, like, I detest his character type, but he's fun. It's weird. I don't know.
He's so genuine about everything he says. Like, him as an actor and also that character. It's like he believes in, like, all the stupid things that are coming out of his mouth.
He's so, like, he's not a good person, but he's, like, kind of stupid. And he's actually, like, not, he's almost, like, less evil than some of the other characters because he's just, like, so stupid that you kind of
He's a better person like Charlie than Day any of the other characters, which was a big problem for me in this movie. It's like, I wouldn't even call them, they're not anti-heroes either, which is the problem. They're all, like,
they're
outright
all
villains. They're all terrible, terrible people, and I actually think there's a place in this world for a movie that's all about villains. This is why I liked the idea of, like, the movie Sinister Six, which might never happen, or, like, Suicide Squad.
That's a whole other conversation.
I'm just saying I want to see a movie where the main characters are all villains that doesn't spin it like Maleficent. Like, there was a place to do that, and this could have been it, but I don't think Quentin Tarantino struck up enough of a connection to make you care about any of them.
Well, I don't agree with that.
Why are you supposed to care about them?
I cared about some of the characters. Like, one, I really like Samuel Jackson's character. He plays a black bounty hunter who was a major in the Civil War, and two of the guys in the the shelter they're in were Confederates, so there's an obvious tension.
Can I tell you something? Apparently it started like at the very, very beginning, this was gonna be a Django and Chain sequel. So that was gonna be Django, Samuel L. Jackson's character. And then he realized that Django is too good of a person to be in this movie. Because they needed a darker, more villainous like take on this character.
That's interesting.
So that's why they replaced him with Samuel L. Jackson's character.
That makes sense. I actually really like it as being Samuel L. Jackson though, because I wrote in my review, this felt like him and Tarantino were together for so long, but like this seems like the first time he really wrote for Jackson. Like Samuel L. Jackson's great in this movie, really funny and twisted and weird. But like, yeah, I cared about him, and I actually really like Daisy Domergue, who is played by Jennifer Jason Leigh.
She's awesome.
Mostly because she is just, I don't know, I've never seen a female character like her before. She is just vile and weird and like gross, and I found her very interesting. But like. And Kurt Russell, I think, is also very good. He's like killing it. Is like he kind of uses all that masculine bravado we know of him in just the right way. But I think Angie's right. I feel like Tarantino purposely takes all the things you expect from him and pushes them to a point where he's purposely trying to make you feel uncomfortable. And if that is his intention, mission accomplished. But it's not what I like. The trailers make it seem like it's a zippy dark comedy, and I'm like, yeah, for part of it. But then I also
really like Tim Roth in the movie. I also really like Tim Roth for half of the movie, and it seems like Tim Roth might have been Tarantino's second choice for the role.
It definitely it seems like Tarantino called up Christoph Waltz, and then Christoph Waltz was like, "Fuck off, I'm doing Spectre, I'm busy." And then he was like, "All right, I'll just call up Tim Roth. Hey, Tim Roth, how's your Christopher Waltz impression?" And Tim Roth was like, "It's fantastic." And they're like, "Come on board."
But anyway, for the first half of the movie, I did find that character really interesting until you get a reveal that shows another side to him that I'm like, nah.
I was kind of bummed out because the big twist was not as, I don't know, exciting or as rich as I had hoped for, without getting into what it is. I was just a little disappointed. I thought we had set up something really interesting, and for it to turn out the way it did, I was like, oh, okay. But yeah, I don't know. I'm bummed that I'm disappointed in The Hateful Eight, because I thought for sure it was going to be one of my favorite films of the year, and instead, I'm at a loss, man. I mean, I really like the performances. I am rooting for Jackson in the Best Actor race to a degree. Like, I at least want him to get a nomination, because I feel like he's a really underrated actor according to the Academy. Do you know he only has one nomination ever?
Really?
Just for Pulp Fiction? So 20 fucking years ago? That's insane. But I'm excited for him. I think this is a good showcase for him. As a movie, I'm less impressed. But I think if you're a Tarantino fan, you have to go, right?
I guess. I think I'm exponentially more disappointed in it because I am a Tarantino fan, and I really did think this was, I mean, this was one of the last movies I had to see before I could lock in my top 10, because I was sure it was
Me too.
If it was on the bottom, I was sure it was going to be in there, and I walked out kind of upset. Like, I just don't know if I could recommend someone sitting through a 3-hour movie like this.
Yeah, afterwards, you know, I saw it with a bunch of critics, and afterwards they said, "Did you like it?" And I didn't know what to say. Which was weird.
I thought it gave you
that is weird.
Christy, speechless. What now?
I mean, it's a movie that I walked out feeling like it gave me a lot to think about. But I mean, even after a couple weeks, I'm still not really sure what to make of it. Which I think kind of says, like, I admire Quentin Tarantino for trying something different. It does feel different from a lot of his other movies. It doesn't have like that same like zippy energy. It doesn't have that like same like fun, gleeful, cathartic violence. So I admire him for doing something different. I don't know necessarily if he knew what else he wanted to present instead, because as I said, I think it's interesting the way he pushes some of his usual themes to, like, you know, past the breaking point, but then I'm not really sure he knew what to do once he got there. But, you know, it's got, like, some interesting performances. If you're a Tarantino completist, it's something that I think you should watch, because it's interesting even if it's not quite what you expect from him.
There's something that I appreciated about the format that we saw it in. There was just something about, like, hearing an overture and getting the intermission and coming back. I don't necessarily think that it did anything good for the movie and the story itself, but I think that's, like, an experience worth exploring in future films.
See, what bummed me out about the 70mm, and I'm going to say this really quickly because we should wrap, but the 70mm, I feel like, it was misused in this because so much of it is shot in the shelter. 70mm is great to give you grandeur and like landscapes and big dance numbers or big action sequences, and that's not what this movie is. So I was actually really disappointed in that aspect. Mm-hmm. But I did think the overture and the intermission was a cool concept. I just don't think they're used well.
No. All right. So I think, yeah. Do you guys recommend it? Or I don't.
Again, I'm recommending with reservations. I mean, if you're really into Tarantino, I think you'll be delighted with parts of it. But whether you're going to be satisfied as a whole, I don't know. I wasn't.
But it's still going to be interesting if you are. So, like Christy, I recommend it with reservations. If you're someone that's like could give or take, though, then maybe
wait until later. With
Tarantino, then maybe this isn't your thing.
All right, there you have it: The Revenant and The Hateful Eight.
Merry Christmas, everyone!
Yeah, really.
May it not include bear maulings or horrible Tarantino-esque violence.
That's a nice message. All right, so that is a wrap on episode 97 of Popcorn Prosecco. You know where to find us: iTunes, where you can subscribe, rate, and comment. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter, at Popcorn Prosecco. You can also like us on Facebook, and all three of us are all over the internet as well. Chrissy, you want to go first?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter, at Chrissy Puchko, KRISTYPUCHKO. And you can find my career highlights on decadentcriminals.com.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And you can catch my writing on collider.com, and my Twitter handle is PNemiroff. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Well, well, well. Looks like Minnie's haberdashery is about to get cozy for the next few days.
Yes, it does.